introduce the first speaker.
That's Debbie P.
I'm an addict named Debbie.
Hi, Debbie.
Am I supposed to talk into that?
Talking to that one.
This one? I'm an addict named Debbie. Debbie. And women do recover.
Yes, we do.
You know, and I want to get this out of the way real quick. My clean date is January 28, 1990. And from that day to this day, my first sponsor died of lung cancer. My second sponsor went back out and committed suicide. Both of my parents died within 3 weeks of each other. I was the only witness to my husband's murder, and I buried my little brother 9 months after my parents died. And my anniversary date is still January 28, 1990. That just tells the newcomer that you don't have to use, even if you want to. The steps of this program work, and I use them to stay here, you know. We're talking about the eighth and ninth step. The eighth step says, we made the list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. The ninth step says, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Let me tell you, I'm the addict of the worst kind, you know, intellectual kind. When I first got here, you know, somebody put a basic text in my hand, and I read the basic text from cover to cover like a novel and said, all right, what do I do now, you know? And it ain't like that, you know? And the steps are in order for a reason. Of course, when I first got here, I wasn't ready to work no steps right away. I was good and crazy. My first 2 years, I did absolutely nothing, you know, other than go to meetings on a regular basis. And that's only because I was in a facility that told me that I'd be homeless if I didn't. You know, I was in a lot of pain going into the second year. And, you know, they say pain is a motivator. For me, that's true. You know, because it made me start to do some work on myself. You know, I didn't beg my sponsor, you know, to stop me from using. You know, I begged my sponsor to instruct me on how to stop acting like a cruddy hoe. You know, and she said, let's get to work. I ain't had no problem with the first step, you know, because the first step, you know, I knew that, especially at the end of my addiction, that there are many times I used against my will. You know, I would have a job interview or something to go to, and I said, well, I ain't gonna use until after I come back. You know, somebody show up with it, you know, and I look up, it's 2 days later, and job interview was, job was given to somebody else, you know. The second step, you know, was a little harder for me because I'm also a recovering Catholic. And I ain't trying to offend nobody when I say that. But the God that I grew up with, my mother told me that God was going to get me if I didn't straighten up. You know, I was taught in catechism that if you marry somebody that's not a Catholic and have a baby without being married, those two things just alone could get you excommunicated from the Catholic Church. Well, see, I'd done that some most stuff, so I figured that God didn't want nothing to do with me. And so when I got here, I figured if I just be quiet, don't make no noise, he won't know I'm down here. You know, so, you know, and so, but I kept coming back, you know. That's one thing that's kind of stuck. They said, keep coming back. And I heard through y'all how God worked for you. You know, and so my concept of God changed, you know, and, you know, I didn't develop a real close relationship with God at that time, but I knew that he wasn't the same God I came in with, you know. And so when I started to trust the process and to trust God, I was able to think about, make a decision to go on with this program, the third step. The fourth and fifth step. Now, I'm gonna tell you something too about, you know, intellectuals. You know, my problem is I do a lot of thinking on my own. And I had about 90 days clean. And, you know, when I was using, I would drink with an uncle of mine, you know. I can't call him an alcoholic, but he sure drank alcoholically. And he would, third of the month, he would get his Social Security check and send me to the bank, to the liquor store. And, and I don't know why he never sent me to get the whole gallon at one time, but he would send me in the morning to get a half a gallon. And him and I, we drink. And then he said, baby girl, go get the other one. I go get another one. So by 3 o'clock in the afternoon, he's real drunk. And the rest of the Social Security check money was in an envelope. And he would toss it underneath the couch and pass out. You know, and suddenly one day I said, wait a minute. You know, by that time, you know, I'm smoking crack real hard. I said, you know, and by the time I was out in the street, I said, it's the third of the month and it's 4 o'clock. I know there's some money up underneath that that couch. And so I went back and I went to my uncle. By that time he was ready for the second half gallon. And he said, go on and get it. He passed out and I took the rest of the money. So of course when I came in and I had about 60, maybe 90 days clean, some money came into my possession. You know, I got a windfall of money, and it just so happened to be the $300. And so I assumed that it was God telling me that I needed to make amends to my uncle, you know. But see, mind you, I didn't do it through any guidance, didn't tell nobody I was going to do it, you know. I just went over to my uncle's house and knocked on the door, and, you know, doing my own thinking. I said, well, I ain't going to give it to him, because he going to drink it up. I'm going to give it to his wife. And so I knocked on the door, my aunt answered the door, and I explained to her what I was doing. First thing came out of her mouth is she called me a real nasty name. And she said, you know, we allowed you to live in our house, and you stole from our family. You know, she says, get out. And, you know, of course she took the money, you know. And I tell you, it was only by the grace of God that I didn't use that day. I felt real cruddy. I managed to make it back to the facility and continue to stay clean. But that was horrible. I was really playing fire doing that on my own, trying to make amends. It wasn't until I'd been here for a minute and I started working the steps with that sponsor in my second year that we started really, really working steps. So I worked steps 4, 5, 6, and 7 in that second year. I had to because I was going to die. You know, and in doing that fourth and fifth step, I identified, you know, the character defects that set up the list for the sixth step, you know. And isn't it surprising, in that same fourth and fifth step, I also was able to construct an eight-step list. You know, I had a list of all the people that I thought I'd harmed. And that's just the beauty of real good sponsorship, because a lot of times you put somebody on a list that don't belong there. And sometimes you need to put somebody on the list and your sponsor will instruct you who to put on the list that really should be on. My daughter's father, now she's 35 now, but back when she was 6 months old, he beat me for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And so I came into this fellowship totally and completely justified, so I thought, in hating him. And of course, my sponsor told me that he needed to be on my list, but I figured I wasn't going to do nothing about it. He was going to be on the list, you know. And in talking to her and setting up the, you know, and a sponsor will tell you not only who belongs on the eight-step list, a sponsor will also tell you how to do the amends, you know, because the definition of amends, amend, to fix, you know, is doing the exact same behavior of the thing that you did to hurt somebody. And so his name came up, you know, in talking to her about doing the amends. And I said, well, I don't have to do no amends to him, you know. Did you hear what I said? I said, he beat me for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. She said, yeah, I heard what you said. Tell me again what you did when you copped the resentment. So while I was telling the story, she held a mirror in front of my face. And I told you, I came into this, well, I didn't tell you, but I came into this fellowship. My daughter was a freshman in college. You know, and this happened when she was six. She was a baby, 6 months old. And so she held a mirror in front of my face while I was telling it to her. And she says, look at you. She says, how long ago did this happen? She said, your face looks like it just happened yesterday. How long are you going to carry it? You know. And so I continued to tell her, but he whooped my ass for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. She said, just tell me what you did. And I had to dig deep, you know. What I would do was, after the butt whooping, I'd have two black eyes, and I wouldn't put any makeup on or sunglasses. And I would go to his mother's house. She'd be giving a barbecue, and I'd knock on the door. She answered the door, and she said, "Oh, my God, what happened to you?" I said, "Your no-good son beat me up." And I didn't have to do that. That was mean. So not only did I owe the amends to him, I owed the amends to his mother, you know. And doing the amends, my sponsor at the time told me, you have to do things different, you know. And what I would do, you know, I carried resentment a long time. You know, and my daughter in the meantime, you know, although my father raised her, she still had a relationship with him. He would come over for a visit, and I would leave the room, you know. He would say something, he would speak to me, and I would just turn my head, you know. And she would say things to me about him, and I said, yeah, right, you know. And I'm going to tell you, I went back to my sponsor, I said, I'm having a real hard time with this, you know, real hard time with this. And she says, well, what you're going to do is you're going to pray for him for 14 days. I said, say what? She said, you're going to pray for him for 14 days. I said, I can't do that. She said, that's okay. She said, you can pray for willingness. So I prayed for a while. I said, God, please make me willing. I hated him, you know. And my first prayer, I'll never forget it. I was on my knees and my teeth were clenched like this. And I said, God bless that MF. You know. But I'm going to tell you, it got better. I kept at it. I prayed. I didn't pray for him for 14 days. I prayed for him for 14 months. Every night, I said, God bless him. Give him everything that I would wish for me. You know, and the willingness started to come. And I'm going to tell you how this works. We don't never see the full picture. You know, this same man that beat me for breakfast, lunch, and dinner 12-stepped my baby brother into this program. Now, my baby brother, I told you I buried him, but my brother died clean. Now, this same brother I'm talking about that beat me, he ain't clean now, you know. But he 12-stepped my brother into this program. And so I had to open up and let go so the blessing could come, you know. So that was my lesson. I remember that Thanksgiving sitting in a meeting with my baby brother on one side and him on the other, you know. And that was a real victory for me, you know. So the eighth and ninth step, what that does is, you know, it clears away. You know, we're born. I believe that we're born perfect human beings. We have a direct and complete intimate relationship with God when we're first born. You know how they talk about babies can, you know, they see angels and stuff. And somewhere along the line in the course of our lives, when stuff happens to us when we're little, and, you know, then we pick up, you know, that direct pipeline of God becomes clogged up. It becomes blocked, you know, because the disease of addiction is just the actual using is just a symptom. You know, the real diseases are being cut off from that power, you know. And so 4 and 5 identifies what we have to do with the blocking. And then 6 and 7 clears out the rest of that, you know, garbage. And then 8 and 9 allows us to be able to, you know, the people that we hurt, you know, the whole process has to become complete. You know, it just ain't enough to identify your defects and have 6 and 7 remove them. You know, the people that you have hurt, you got to clear that wreckage up too. It's like, you know, you mop your kitchen floor. Well, you don't want to continue to throw dirt on it. You know, so you have to get in there and clean up some stuff. My other amends that the person that was on my list, big amends, was my mother. Now, you know, and I had to get real clear about this too with my sponsor. I figured, again, I'm thinking on my own, that because I was in another state in the worst of my addiction, you know, I'm from New Jersey, and I was in D.C. in the worst of my addiction when I became homeless and went into treatment. So I figured I wasn't hurting her, you know. But the sheer fact of me being missing in action, I was missing in action for the last 3 years of my addiction. And my brother used to tell me how she would sit around the Christmas tree crying. I never even paid that any attention until, you know, my husband and I had been in a long relationship, and we used to get his kids every other week. And his daughter at the time was 6 years old. And he had to go to work, and so it was just her and I, and she wanted to ride her bike. She brought her bike over. And she got on her bike, and I said, you just stay in this block. So she'd ride up and down a little block. And so I went and I got on the phone. When I got off and looked outside, I didn't see her. I'm like, oh, no. And I walked round and round the block for about 20 minutes crying. I'm like, oh my God, where is this child? I called the police. I was frantic. You know, the police went out looking for her. After about an hour and a half, she comes riding around on her little bike. She had found a little girl to play with in somebody's yard. You know, but just that feeling. Imagine my mother going through that same feeling for 3 whole years. She didn't know whether I was alive or dead, you know. And that's why when I came into recovery, you know, I asked my sponsor how to make the amends to her. It wasn't enough just to say I'm sorry, you know, because not only did she was my mother, she raised my daughter. And so she said, since you weren't there, you were missing in action, you know, you make the amends by being available. And so I told my mother, I said, no matter where I am in this world, I promise you that my feet will be underneath your table every Christmas. And I kept that promise from the time I got clean until the day she died. Now, I said that to her, you know, but I'm gonna tell you the real amends that I made to her was when, it was a couple of conventions ago. You know, I paid for the condo, did my registration, and it was right after my husband was murdered. And coming to this event convention at that time was very important to me. But my dad called me. He said, your mother's real sick. She's in the hospital. She has pneumonia in both lungs. I says, oh, Dad, I'll be right there. So I just told my friends, y'all go to the condo, have a good time. I'm out. I got to go home. And when I got home, I said to my, my father said to me, he says, you know, my mother pulled through. She says, she's going to be all right. He says, but can you be available for a couple of weeks to look after her while I go in the hospital? I said, Dad, you know what? I'm going to be available permanently, moving back home. And I did that. And those 3 years, and my mother just really didn't need me to take care of the house. You know, she had plenty of money. She paid somebody to come do that. She didn't need a nurse. You know, there was a nurse that came in most of the day, every day. What my mother was very lonely. She needed a companion. So I was able to complete the amends. I told you I was going to be available for her. And I was her companion, you know, for the whole 3 years I was home until the day she died. Right before she died, she said to me, you know, you're a widow. You know, my father by that time had died 3 weeks previous. And the night before she died, she said, you're a widow. How do you keep going? I said, Ma, I do it a day at a time. I said, sometimes a minute at a time. She says, well, I'm too old to keep going. You know, I says, Mom, whatever happens, I'm going to be here. And she put her arms around me and said, I love you. That's the last words that my mother actually said to me, you know. So I was able to complete that amends and completely mark that off my list. You know, I picked up, you know, and I have 2 more amends on my list to make. And I have to say this, too. I heard somewhere that, you know, you have to put yourself on the list, you know, and I disagree with that because I figure I made the amends to myself when I joined Narcotics Anonymous and stopped using, you know, because I was killing myself using drugs. So the opposite of that behavior is not to use drugs and to recover. And so the very first amends I made was to me when I came in. So I just wanted to get that off the top, you know. But the last amends, and I've been offered the opportunities, you know, they said it's in the literature that when you're ready to make the amends, the opportunity will come when you're ready to make them. That aunt that I told you that had cussed me out, you know, when I gave her that $300, I ran into her. I had about 15 years clean, and I ran into her in the supermarket, and I says, you know, can we have a talk when I'll come and take you out for dinner? Can we have a talk? She says, I know what you want to talk to me about, and we ain't even got to do all that. She says, I just want you to know that I'm proud of what you're doing, and just keep doing it, you know. And so I was able to check that off my list. My last amends is to, you know, I have to be real careful, and of course that's not 10 step stuff, not to add people to that list. And I did that. There's 2 more people on that list. One of the people is one of my school friends, and I recently was given the opportunity to make the amends to her, and I didn't. You know, there were some things she said to me, and I stepped in the way instead of letting God do it, and I says, well, later for her. you know, and I'm going to have to go back eventually when God gives me another opportunity to make an amends to her, you know, because I stole big money from her house, used. And but my other amends is a recent one. You know, I told y'all that I was the only witness to my husband's murder. And, you know, and I did a lot of work in the area of relationships, because the only thing I knew how to do when I got here was to take hostages. And so I did a lot of work. You know, that same sponsor before she died put me on a man band before I met my husband for a year. You know, celibate for a whole year, fancy that. And so, and you know, I did some real extensive work on myself, you know, through with her guidance. And so by the time I met my husband, you know, and I understood in doing that work that my picker is smashed beyond repair. You know, they always talk about your picker being broke, mine is smashed beyond repair. And so, when God placed my husband in my life, it was truly him, because it wasn't somebody I was attracted to, but I could see his light, and you know, and we walked this process together. You know, after he died, I was in the very busy taking care of my parents and all that, so I was celibate for 3 years, right? And then what did I do? I used my picker again, and you know, and I, you know, I look back on the day, I'm like, why did I do that? Who knows why? It's the disease of addiction, you know. And I really owe amends to the brother, because I really took him out of his comfort zone. You know, he's not in this process. I tried to make him be in it, you know. I tried to make him be something he's not, you know. And after a year, that madness, you know, I said, you know what, I'm real sorry. You know, we are totally not compatible. You know, and I'm going to tell you what brought the situation to a head. You know, I smelled alcohol on it, you know, and I started screaming and hollering, you are drinking? And he put his hands on both hips and he says, I'm 52 years old. And if I'm going to take, I'm going to take a drink if I want to. And it stopped me. I said, you know what, you're absolutely right. I am powerless over what you do. But I'm not powerless over you doing it when you're with me. I said, so we're really not compatible, you know, you're not in the same process I am, and I'm real sorry. And I did apologize to him for taking you hostage. Now, I didn't explain to him the extent of that, so we broke up, but I really do owe the brother the amends, and I need to go back and explain to him why, you know, but that's my process. And because of working both of these steps, you know, I'm basically able to pretty much go anywhere and look anybody in the face. You know, guilt and shame no longer have any value in my life. You know, I'm an addict named Debbie. Thanks.
Thank you, Debbie. At this time, I'd like to introduce a second speaker, my dear old friend, Jeff G.
Okay. I'm Jeff, I'm an addict.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody. I want to thank Debbie for setting the tone. That was pretty tough. I don't know how I'm going to be able to deal with that. That was pretty good. Impressive. And I had just whispered to her before we started, when in doubt, just share your story. So, wow. They're still letting a lot of people come in the room. And y'all can board the door now. That's enough. It's enough people here. And thank you. Lock the thing up. Eighth and ninth step. You know, I'm one of those guys who's always been accused of not working a program. You know, people don't think I work steps because of the patterns of behavior that I've displayed, the disobedience and the shit that I do. With a lot of clean time. 23rd of April, I will celebrate and acknowledge 20 years clean.
Yes, sir.
And, we're gonna, that's a big deal to me, still. Nothing else, that's a big deal. We'll celebrate at my home group, Foggy Bottom Steps. Everybody's welcome. We won't have enough room to accommodate all of y'all, but we'll try to get you in there. 28th, at 8:30. That's the eighth step meeting. It'll be a step meeting, and we'll just talk about the eighth step, and a few people will say nice things about me, and some people might not say nice things about me, but that's what we do. And the only reason I was telling a lot of people about the anniversary was because it's 20 years. I mean, I've never done anything for 20 years other than breathe. Nothing, no relationships, no job, school. My fixed address has only been 14 years, which is a miracle in itself as well. But I've not done anything as consistent as I've been blessed and lucky, because it's really luck more than anything else. It's the grace, but it's really a lot of luck involved. Because I still have input. And some days I don't do what I'm supposed to do. But this is an incredible... I never would have imagined me lasting this long in here. My original goal was 10 years. I told Stanley A., who was one of my guys that showed me the light when I first showed up, and Larry C., guys I grew up with. Stan had 9 years when I got here, and Larry had six. And I said, well, shit, I could do 10 years of this. This ain't that hard. It don't look like it's that hard. So I said, I'll do 10. And the first step that I looked at, my first home group was 12 and 12. That used to meet on Park Road on Monday night. And it was a step meeting, a tradition meeting. And I didn't like the tradition part. It didn't make a lot of sense. The steps was a stretch for me, but the tradition really was, to me, a waste of time. I didn't understand why we even had to get into all that. You know, I'm like a 30-day wonder, but I think I know what's going on. But on the board, they had the step list and the tradition list, which is pretty prominent in most of the meetings that I've been in, and I'm sure a lot of you guys have seen them. And so I started looking at them, but about a week clean. The step that jumped off the page for some reason was 9. It was the first one that I looked at it that said, I said, I can do that one now. For real, you know, the order and all that really didn't make, you know, like I said, I didn't see the point in all that, but 9 was one. I said, I can get on 9 now. You know, my old half partner was living, she had just came in the room and was deciding whether she would stay. My mom, I'd driven her crazy for years and folks, and I said, I can do 9 now. I'm Catholic like you, Debbie. So, of course, if you're Catholic, you know one thing we're always consumed with, and that's guilt and shame. You know, we do believe in God because it's just the way it is. You know what I mean? So that helped lighten a lot of the emotional load. Because for me, the whole 20 years in this thing and the whole 53 years I've been lucky to be here, it's been a series of emotional adjustments to life in its terms. Life presents what it wants to present when it's good and ready. And it never asks, are you right with what we're ready to do here? You know, it don't check in or ask your permission. You know, I've heard people share some stuff in here over the years that it's just been incredible, the courage to talk about some of the stuff that we talk about in here. And folks just seem to get through, you know. But going back to that ninth step deal, I went home to the girl that I was my half partner with, and I told her, I need to tell you something. I just came from this meeting on Park Road, and some stuff I did, you know, she sent me down with $90 to get some crack on Clifton Street. And I knew her for about maybe 2 weeks. And I went in, bought the $9 worth of crack, and I made them one mistake, the cardinal mistake, smoking crack, is that I hit one. And needless to say, when I got back to the house, I didn't have any more. So the whole walk, you know, the whole walk from Clifton back to Mount Pleasant Place, I'm trying to create this lie where I'm going to tell this girl why I'm not coming back with her piece of the... Other stuff. She gave me the whole $9. I smoked it all up. And like I said, I didn't know if but for a hot minute. And I made up some shit about somebody took it and snatched. I jumped out the window chasing him. Something wild, you know. And I remember, all I remember at the end of the conversation was a phone come zinging past my ear. And I told her, I said, I want to apologize to you for that happening. And then only the next instant, the telephone came whizzing by my ear and crashed into the wall. And I remember mentioning that to somebody, and they said, well, Jeff, that's probably why that's the ninth step and not the first step. And you probably need to look at the thing in order. Andrew started coming to the meeting. She kind of struggled for that whole year, 1988. And eventually, December of 88, she surrendered. I spoke at her 18th anniversary down in Manassas last year. And it was really a true honor to know that two old crackheads could put it together and hang this long, you know what I mean? That's the blessing of this incredible program. And the people, the steps, you know. My process with the steps, see, I don't really go into the whole thing about what I did to get here, because if I didn't do anything to get here, I wouldn't be standing in front of you. So I don't think it's really necessary to recite to you. I know what I did. I ain't do shit. And I got lucky and caught a break. Okay, I'm what I would consider a classic underachiever. I've never lived up to my potential, and I know it. I might be the smartest guy in this room. So what? My lack of common sense has always been my dilemma. And, it's like God don't want you to be smart and have a little common sense at the same time, because you're already a legend in your own mind because you think you're smart. But with no common sense to throw in there, you know, you tend to become like a legend in other people's minds, and that's not really good. So common sense has always been my dilemma, or lack of it. So this is a program that's really based on common sense. You know, Richard W. was a gentleman that I worked with at Time Life Books back in the 80s. And he was one of the first people that saw something in me to tell me something that might keep me around. Because the people that were coming in with me would only last until the next payday. Then they would go right back out and get high. And I didn't. For some reason, I didn't go with them. You know, I just went to the little meetings, and I went through the emotional stuff that you go through when you're detoxing, because I never went to treatment or anything like that. I just kind of walked off the street. And people used to say that was a big deal to me. And I said, that was just the way I got here. And if I asked how many people in here never went to treatment and just walked into a meeting, I'm sure it's a few of y'all. You know, you get here how you get here. And it's important not to get here, but it's important to recognize that this might be your last shot and you need to stay here. You know what I'm saying? So at 33 years old, I had enough sense to realize that this might be my shot and I need to go ahead and embrace it. My first meeting was in Uptown, 12th and U, or 12th and S in D.C. It was a Saturday night at 8 o'clock. Donna B. was the chairperson. Donna and I used to shoot coke in the post office. Donna died of AIDS 3 years later. Six or seven people walked in the meeting that night that I knew because I was an era addict. I didn't have a drug of choice. I used whatever was out at a certain time. So in the 70s, it was weed and Bolt, and then the freebase thing became popular. That's when I met Lynn over at Curry's house, right over on Delafield Street. And Curry had a lot of money because his mom was she might have been the first or second person that won the $1 million lottery. I think she was the first or second back in 1977. So we would get high at Curry's house, and so it was weed, it was boat, it was crack, it was you know, shooting band, it was drinking. So to be here, standing in front of you is a miracle beyond miracles. But to be able to hold a coherent conversation with you, with all the boat I used to smoke, you know. Incredible. Grace of God, believe that. When I went to the Uptown that night, I knew that, you know, the night before was Friday. I blew my check again for the last time, because in the end, the pattern, and this is why I knew I was powerless, the pattern in the end for me was you know, I would get paid on Friday. I would be broke about 7 o'clock Friday night. I didn't even get the honor and privilege of being a weekend warrior. I was just like Friday afternoon joker. It's over. You know, folks weren't giving you none. They were real petty and stingy. I was petty and stingy. And Saturday, I was too depressed to go to work. Sunday, I'd go up to the little market and steal, stuff so we could have some dinner, some chicken wings. I was like a Russell with the chicken wings, and I was always good at stealing. And I'm like a long history of being a kleptomaniac, so it was easy to steal stuff to eat. And then Monday, instead of making some sort of decision to get help or tell somebody this might not be working for me, I would go right back into the pattern of thinking and obsessing about using when I got paid on Friday. And that's the pattern. It went that way every week for a long time. I just could not get out of the way and understand that. First of all, I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know what it was. And I still was dealing with people who thought that killing themselves on the installment plan was socially acceptable. So it was just difficult because everybody I dealt with for many years, that was the focus. That seemed to be like the common thing that we all had. Everybody got high. So, you know, that's what we did. I know in recovery now that the reason that we're all here, so we think, is the dope. And it's the one common thing that I know that we all have in common is dope. You know what I mean? It whipped our asses before the break, and here we are. Now, after you put the dope down, it becomes a whole different story. Okay. Y'all know. Anybody in here who's been clean a couple of years knows. And this is an incredible, you know, you're asking people for profound changes in lifestyle, which start with a profound change in thinking. And like I said, if you think you know everything, then you're going to have problems adjusting to that, to the change in your thought patterns. So the NA deal with the steps, the sponsor, the network, the people honestly sharing where they are and everything sort of helped me because I'm from a family of folks who don't tell you nothing. It's not your business. You know, people hold the secrets. And to come in here and hear people talk about being abused as children, which happened to me when I was 9 years old, people being abandoned, people adopted, families giving them away. And it seemed to be always an underlying something before the dope came into the game. You know, it was always some shit had happened at 7 and 8 and 9, and then I picked up at 12 in my case. And it was like a sigh of relief for a minute. You know, I was like, I hooked up with these guys who was doing the same thing. I was, you know, I wanted to be with them, and I just did what they did. And jails and institutions and death quickly became a part of their story. And again, the grace of God and dumb love. You know, I don't know why I'm not in somebody's penitentiary. My brother used to get locked up like every 2 or 3 years because he'd always have a problem picking up guns and stuff. My brother died at 46. As a direct result of one is too many and a thousand is never enough. And the coroner has still never told us what his cause of death was. But we knew he was shooting heroin again and he was drinking and body just said, fuck it, shut down, and that was the end of the story. And I looked at him and he had this look on his face in Howard and it was so peaceful and for like 2 minutes, because I'd already made amends to the family. The family was liking me again, and you know, at that time, I had 10, 12, 15 years clean. So they all understood I was crazy and jacked up, and mom was still talking to me like I was 10 years old. And I'm like, Mom, 45, why, you know, because I'm still emotionally acting like a child. And Mom was my first sponsor. My mother's 71 years old, and she still kicks ass and takes names.
Yeah.
You know, she is a remarkable, remarkable human being. And when it comes time for the angels to call her in, she'll be going into heaven on the first ballot. No doubt. She ain't going to have to sit in the hallway and beg and wait. You know, some people, when they go, I imagine they ain't getting in on the first call, which is me. I'm working to hopefully at least get invited in. And some people going to get in on the first go. This is real shit that I'm talking about because folks is leaving. You know, Debbie talked about people leaving, man, and you talk about the void that's there when you ain't getting high no more. That's a hell of a hole to fill right then and there. But when you start losing people, that's some devastating shit. And the nerve of us to not pick up is the nerve of me not to go get high when my brother just went in and lay down and died. Two days later, he was looking like a shiny quarter. We was talking, damn, he looking good. 2 days later, he was dead. And nobody went to the liquor store and kirked out. You know, my cousin got shot in the head about 6 months after that. They just found him in the alley. You know, he had been trying to get clean since the 80s. I mean, young guy, just strung out, man. Could not surrender to this thing, man. This disease is just too damn deep. It's way bigger than all of us. You cannot minimize what we fight here. People try to act like it's no big deal. Why are you still doing the same shit you've been doing? Why you can't change? Why? Because I got the disease of addiction that just do its thing. Its whole job is to sit in that corner and wake my ass out. It ain't about how insidious this shit is. It ain't about how baffling it is. It's not baffling. This shit is patient. This shit is fucking... My disease be chilling. And I watch how it plucks people off. You know what I'm saying? And every couple of weeks, it just like sets its sight on me. And it starts throwing little shit over in the corner to just get my attention. Let me know that it's still there. And Jeff, I'm still out to get your ass. Okay, 20 years clean? Okay. It ain't over yet, Smith. Okay. It ain't over yet. So that graduation shit and walking away and I'm leaving the program and all that, please, I ain't going nowhere. I'm a predecessor now. Where am I going? Shit. I got my papers from California. You're the official predecessor. I had to say that. I'm lying. I just want to say real quick before I'm going to talk eight-step list. I did it in my home group. I'm not going to go through all of this stuff because, believe me, I'm no step guy at all. And I sponsored Fred for 18 years, and he'll be the first to take. Well, my sponsor really don't do, but we've done a cycle of steps together. And that's all that's required. That's my job as a sponsor. Anybody I sponsor is to at least attempt to get you to take a look at some steps. In the meantime, I need to keep taking a look at them, too. Because the disease of addiction, like I said, don't go nowhere. And I did eight-step list in my home group one night at Foggy Bottom. Green pen, I wrote the list of people in recovery. I mean, before I got here, institutions that, you know, I've always cheated because I'm a liar, cheater. I don't get away with nothing no more. This is what pisses me off. You get by, but you don't get away, and I'm living proof. Right, darling? Turner Revenue caught me. They caught me on. Oh, this is a big one. They caught me on. I'm telling y'all the truth now. So this is me. This ain't NA. This is no reflection on the program. This is my shit. I was working. I'm disabled, technically, but I was working for years. And all of a sudden, they decided to just audit my shit. And they called me in, and come to find out, they said I owed them $88,000. Because I had a job, and this is just like the last couple of years. This ain't no before I got here shit. This is 18, 19 year clean shit, you know. I keep it real. I'm going to tell y'all. That's what they told me how to do in here. Tell you, you know, because I know two other people did it too. In fact, one of the guys on my job came up to me when I was talking to him. He said, man, the same thing happened to me back in 1990. I owed him $100,000. I've been sending him $75 a month for 20 years. He said, don't even worry about them people. They erased the debt to my son because my main motivation wasn't about me getting over on nobody. I was really, I mean, if you know me, I've had a whole rack of health shit going on, and God just kind of wakes me up and allows me to get up and live because God knows I need to do what I need to do. And I'm willing enough and man enough to deal with the consequences. And not only that, I'm man enough to tell somebody what I did. It's no secret. They erased the debt that my, because the money, half the money was going to my son. And they sent my son, my son's mother a letter down in Atlanta where they live. You owe us $40,000. And she just kicked the hell out. I owe him 80, you owe him 40, so we just laughed together. And I don't have $88, much less $88,000. Then I start thinking, I'm not a homeowner. They can't really take anything from me. All they can do is just bug me about it. I don't know if they can come and lock me up. But I got an attorney, and this guy's been looking at my, he's been taking care of this thing for me pro bono, Greg, for the last year and a half. And these people are not in no hurry to, they erased my son's debt. They told her, don't even worry about that. So I'm knocking on wood that I'll get a letter, and Jeff, you're off the hook again. I'm really looking forward to that letter. I think that's going to happen. That was on the list. Internal revenue. I've been paying them some money for about 4 or 5 years. Girl was doing my taxes for me, and just didn't sign the papers. She kind of beat me. I haven't gotten a refund from them in about 8 or 9 years. I don't even know what it's like to get a tax refund. I hear it's pretty good. You know, you're able to do a couple of things, you put some gas in the car, get some groceries. I don't get shit, so I don't know. I hear it's a good thing. But that's all a part of getting honest with the people, making a list, and then not only that, stepping up and letting the people know what you did, or being open to the fact that they're going to come after you or talk to you. And again, talking to other folks about this, particularly in recovery, this is not an uncommon thing that I'm talking about. It seems to happen to a lot of people. I'm just open to the possibilities of things getting better. I'm not complaining anymore. Unfortunately, unlike you, my name is on my list because I was doing so much crazy stuff to hurt others, I really was hurting myself. And the reason that I think I was hurting other people was because I just was not happy with my station in life and what I should be doing and where I think I should be. A 53-year-old male with almost, 20 years clean or whatever. Just some days it just gets so rough out there, man. You just want to throw it in, you know. The work I do, I've been surrounded by disenfranchised people the whole time I've been clean. I work on a psych unit, so I'm dealing with people with mental illness, people who get abandoned, the system, how it sticks it to them, and you know, they don't get better, they just go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and I'm sitting there every day looking at these people, and what I'm seeing, even like I look out here and I see like a reflection of me in the room right here, it's the same thing with the folks on my job. I feel sort of disenfranchised sometimes. I feel like the system is, I don't even want to get into that. The system is definitely sticking it to us all, so believe that. So a lot of days my thinking tells me it's really just not a great day. Life just isn't that wonderful. Like, you know what I'm saying? So in the amends process, I just have to kind of like go on in spite of what I'm thinking and not let my little punk feelings dictate anything, because at the end of the day, nobody don't really care what I'm feeling anyway. It's really my shit. And you just have to learn. I think the greatest thing about being here is that the more you talk about it, it doesn't necessarily remove it. It sort of like brings what we're really about together. You know what I'm saying? It's really about shared experience. That's really what the program is about. That's what the steps allow me to do, is to just tell you stuff, ask you for some help, which is the biggest thing that I've struggled with in here. I think that graduation piece, Greg, is really about, I need some help, y'all. And I'm too cool to say, I'm suffering, I'm hurting, you know what I'm saying? I need y'all to help me out and everything. But people know. You know, your friends know, your folks know. This is a powerful program. But you got to invest in it. And it's really about just doing some step work. And it's really about just showing up. It's really about trying to get out of your way to do something, a little something for somebody else. Seems like God, I'm trying to get cool points with your creator, so I'm going to try to do a little something so that he'll... Okay, Jeff, that was good. That was a good one right there. You get 25 points for that one. Now I want you to work on some stuff over here. You know, sometimes, you know, I get into these little schizophrenic conversations with God, and I'm asking questions, and I'm mad about stuff, and I'm wondering, you know, why things are the way they are and all that. And it goes back to when I used to get high. We used to sit around tripping and having these same conversations 30 years ago. Nothing really has changed then, you know? So in sort of like wrapping this thing up, I would suggest you get a sponsor. I would suggest that you would allow the sponsor to take you through the steps, because that's really the only job that the sponsor has. If you can get a sponsor that will hang out with you and buy you stuff and take you shopping and feed you and all that, that's kind of like one of the bonuses, one of the added parts of the program. But that ain't really the job. You know what I mean? Go to the meetings regularly. My regular is not, I need to improve on my regular. I need to kind of get back. I go to my home group every Monday night, and I might make two or three meetings a week. It's not that I'm that busy or that, you know, balance for me is to just try to, like, stay here. And because, like I said, my dad is in the nursing home now. You know, he's kicking. He's hanging tough. He's 88. And I don't know, we're about to put him in a nursing home, and that's going to be a whole new another thing that I'll probably be talking about. Because he was on my list too. He didn't do shit for me for many years. And when I got clean, I went into therapy, and then on my fourth step, him and my daughter were like the biggest piece of my fourth step. That's what I pulled out of my fourth step, and into the eighth step was the relationship with my father and my brother. I mean, my father and my daughter, who's now 27. Everybody else in my family, we were already cool, you know. But something about dad not being in and brought up that abandonment piece. And, you know, my father's cool as shit. And one thing about my father is he's a Viking. Because he could have threw in the towel a long time ago with all the stuff he's gone through over the last 20 years. And he's an amazing guy, too. He the man. You know, he hanging in there. He told me he was tired last week for the first time, so I'm beginning to worry about him. He's got a remarkable wife. They've been married 44 years. She's 83, and she just shows up for him every day. You know, she's tired. She told me, "I'm tired. Jeff, you guys going to have to help out." And I said, "I'll do anything I can. I don't know what I can do, but I'll show whatever you need me to do, I'm there." And she's like, you know, they didn't like me when I was using, but now they, you know, they can't seem to get enough of my ass. They love me around. They call me all the time. "Jeff, take us here. Come on, do this, do that." And I just show up for them. That's family, you know. The family seems to be the most important amends in my personal journey through this thing, was cleaning up the shit in my household. And then I got to try to clean up stuff with Darlene, and that's a whole nother, meeting. We ain't going to go there, but God bless her. She's a tough girl, too. You can put up with me for an hour and a half. You anyway, thank you. Some people need some acknowledgement for the efforts that they put into things. And there's nothing wrong with giving people their roses while they're still here. You know what I'm saying? This has been very enlightening once again. I really enjoy our convention, and that's the last thing that I want to touch on. This thing has just blown up. People have found our little secret out, and I love it. Every workshop is packed. I mean, you can't get in workshops. So in essence, maybe we've outgrown this particular facility. I hope not, but you know, CMP Region number 22, Central America. Thank you guys for inviting me to be a part of it again. It looks like we did it again, you know, and I hope that the folks who are visiting from out of the area bring some people back next year. We'll make some space for you. We had the whole, when we used to do this thing, we only had like the convention center, two or three hotels. Now we have all Ocean City for the weekend, the whole strip. And then sometimes folks even go up in the Rehoboth from Delaware and shit. That's recovery, y'all. That's, I don't know. That's how you get 20 years clean. You just enjoy and embrace all of this goodness and push past the bullshit. And, you know, that's kind of how it works for me in my life, you know. And again, I want to just thank the program people for asking me. Lynn, thank you. Thank you guys for being here for us. And I'm going to go over here and sit down now. Thanks for having me.